month away, guys, from the annual trip to Comicpalooza. Yeah, it's official. We are going to go back this year and do a live show again. Yeah, I'm trying to think how many shows we've done. It's got to be at least our sixth or so. And but it is July 17th and 18th, I believe. I hope I don't get those dates wrong. here in Houston, Texas. Pulling up my calendar real quick. July 16th and 17th. Okay. I was close. And we will be at Comicpalooza again this year doing a live show. It is official part of the podcast partnership program. Of course, I've been involved with Comicpalooza for about 12 years now, whether I've done their blog form or as part of the co-coordinator for the podcast program. But we're back. I know how much Long loves Comicpalooza.
And, I'd like to find it in its early years.
Yeah, it's definitely changed from what it was. I enjoy seeing friends and seeing all the cool toys and things and, you know, the artwork and spotting the occasional celebrities, kind of cool. And but I do enjoy doing the live show with you guys. You know, last year was a lot of fun doing the Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. And this year we are going to talk, we can announce it. We're going to talk 30 years of Batman Returns. And we did cover Batman Returns on the show, and it was an episode that Long missed. And but we're not covering it quite the same sense that we do our normal show. Our Comicpalooza show is usually a little different, a little more, I guess you could almost say, laid back. Not that this is not fancy. We're pretty casual on the show, but yeah. Comicpalooza will be just more of a loose look at 30 years of Batman Returns. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about at the show. And we don't know yet if we're recording Saturday or Sunday. Probably, I think, Sunday, since I know, Matt, you're going to help volunteer at the podcast booth. And I know you told Carrie definitely probably only Sunday. So you weren't sure if you'd make it Saturday yet or not. So I imagine we'll probably be recording Sunday, I would think, yeah, at some point. And I'm going to be on at least one panel I know of that involves Star Wars. And I'm sure I might get asked to be on another panel, and which is fine. It's funny. I like doing the show with you guys. I'm not always enthusiastic about the panels because, yeah, I'm pretty introverted. It's hard for me to get up there and talk in front of people, but I'll do it. I'll do my best and I'll have fun. And I'll put my fears of talking in front of people aside and do it for the betterment of the Rebel Radio podcast. And
there we go.
And this is the Rebel Radio podcast. And this is Mark.
This is Matt. This is Long.
And, you know, so I'm looking forward to it. I am, you know, I wish that Comicpalooza was, I don't know if I want to say as good as it used to be, but a little less corporate than it is now. Maybe that's the right word. I think it was a better product when it was more homegrown, but at the same time, I'm not going to discount it because I think it's great that we have a large comic convention in a city as big as Houston, because there's not a whole lot of them, and the city should have something big and to enjoy. And so I hope Comicpalooza lives long and prosper and does well for years to come, because it's all we've got right now, you know? And so enjoy it while we can. And so far the guest list is, lacking being nice. I hope they can announce some better guests in the next few weeks before the show, because as on the celebrity or even the comic book standpoint, nothing's really exciting to me right now. And that's just being honest. Hopefully it gets better. So we'll see how it goes, but it should be fun. You know, it should be fun. We'll have a good time. And you know, you put Long behind a mic, anything can happen. You know, he gets out there and he just starts waxing poetic and calling out Ming Chen and stuff. So, you know,
I forgot what he said to him. I know I called him out. When are you getting back on TV or some shit like that?
Ming's always a good sport, man. He's a big supporter of Comicpalooza and podcasting in general. And so that's cool that we have an ambassador like that, you know, that he grew from the ashes of being Kevin Smith's message board moderator to working for Kevin and be on Comic Book Men, and he's doing his thing, and that's cool. And then the cool thing about Ming is he might be a, you know, kind of a C-list celebrity, so to speak, but he doesn't let it go to his head. He's a cool guy, and a lot of fun. And he's got a good coffee shop here in Houston, Coral Sword. Which
Is he from Houston?
No, but he's got family in Texas. I think he's got some cousins here or something. So yeah. So he's got some ties to Texas.
To visit his family or something.
It's still co-owned by Hunter Pence, huh? Coral Sword?
Yeah, Hunter Pence still owns Coral Sword with him. And he started his own podcast studio up in the New Jersey area, a Shared Universe podcast. So, him and Mike Zapsik. Yeah. So, but good guys, man. I met Mike a couple times too as well. And he's a good guy too. And good people. And it's kind of cool, to have Ming Chen in the corner of Compalooza's podcasting. So, and he'll be back for Compalooza this year too. So it should be fun. I don't know if I should have officially announced it on our show, but not that anyone's going to go tell because they haven't officially announced. But even last year, they never really officially announced Ming. He was just there as part of the Compalooza program. So he'll be back. So, and we'll be there. And you come see us. We'll have some stickers and buttons and stuff. Come ask me. I might give you one. Matt might make you do a funny dance or something to get one, but
So. Yeah. Don't give them something for nothing.
That's right. You got to at least bend down and touch your toes.
Yeah. See your yoga techniques.
That's right. But how are you fellas doing? Doing good this week? I had to go back to work. It's been kind of rough. I'm tired. But it's okay.
I think today was definitely the worst day on my new job so far.
Yeah.
Certainly hot as hell. I guess yeah, well, it rained in parts of Houston, and thankfully I missed it. So I was afraid I was going to get caught in the rain doing these deliveries and stuff, but thankfully they've already rolled through by the time I got there. So, but yeah, it's a long story short, but for some reason the system didn't convert a lot of orders to the delivery trucks. And guess who had to deliver them?
Oh, man.
No.
Yeah. And I had to load the van to do it, too. So,
Longzilla. Yep. Well, you survived. You're here.
Yeah.
It's Friday night, relaxing time now.
Yeah, the sucky part was, I was going to get something to eat on the way home. I was like, let me get some KFC. Don't feel like KFC. Well, first of all, no one answered the freaking drive-through, so I was like driving away. Yeah, just didn't feel like Taco Bell, didn't feel like Subway, didn't feel like McDonald's either. Whatever. Let's just go home.
Does anyone ever feel like Taco Bell? It's more like that's just a convenience food. I don't think anyone ever feels like it.
I eat Taco Bell on Tuesdays and Thursdays for some reason because, Taco Tuesday or Taco Thursdays, whatever. So
yeah,
I like their beefy five-layer burrito.
I like that's that a good one, actually.
Yeah, I bet you like that and some Diablo sauce.
Bet you like it beefy.
Oh, yeah.
Mark, why do you always have to make things weird?
One asked what he liked at Taco Bell either. So, I'm just saying.
Whatever. Anyways.
Whatever.
But yeah. I didn't get to watch anything for download this, just to preempt that, except for Obi-Wan. So you don't have to waste your time asking me what I did.
Find that.
Beautiful segue, by the way.
That's the lead in to download this, where we tell people what we watched. Stream possibly played this year or this week, this year, and then
this year.
Well, long watched absolutely dick shit except for Obi-Wan, which we'll talk about in a minute. So, fine, I guess I'll go first then, since I didn't go first last week and it's only me and Matt. I watched the new episode of The Boys. It feels like Butcher and his team are trying to come up with a plan now to take out Homelander. And that may or may not involve, this is a bit of a spoiler here, but that may involve the hero that they thought was dead, which is Soldier Boy, but it appears Soldier Boy is not dead. He's been in some sort of cryogenic type freeze or something.
Russian lab, which
made all the women of the world happy when they got to see Jason Ackles' butt in that scene.
Yep.
It's like, thanks, the boys, for showing more male nudity.
The women do like him.
Yes. And so we'll see if Butcher's plan comes to fruition as the show carries on next week. And Homelander continues to be one of the most vile, disgusting, well-written villains on screen. You hate him so much, but you start to realize the reason you hate him is because the writers have done their job in making you hate him a lot. Anthony Starr does a fantastic job of bringing Homelander to life. I will give that guy complete credit on making Homelander as creepy and fucked up and nasty as he has made him. So credit to Anthony Starr playing a really good part on that show. Cause that's not easy to do, man. You know, people think acting, you know, when you're playing you're a good person and you're playing someone who's vile and just evil and disgusting. You got to really kind of dig deep for that kind of role sometimes. And Anthony's doing a good job with it. So credit to him. But a good show, man. I like the boys. And then, I've watched a few more episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Really liking that. It's a good anime. It's funny because it definitely has that. As anime started kind of getting a little more popular in the 90s, there's a lot of teenagery sexual innuendos in a lot of those shows back then. And there's a lot of it in Neon Genesis too, where the guys are always trying to check out what's her name, Masato, whenever they come to pick him up, and they think that she's so hot. It's really funny. It's mostly played for laughs, but it's just, you can see that style from the 90s anime writing. But it's a good show. And then I watched because Matt had bought it on his Amazon Prime, and since I'm a moocher, I watched the Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the Nicolas Cage, Pedro Pascal movie. And I think that movie, it's exactly what you expect it to be. And I think that's why it works. I think if it's not what you expect it to be, it probably wouldn't work. But you watch it and it unfolds and it's predictable and everything happens exactly as you would expect it to be. But I think that's what makes it have such a charm. Nicholas is great in it. Pedro is fantastic. It's Nicholas is playing himself and Pedro is playing this guy who wants to be Nicolas Cage, essentially wants to be an actor. So it's kind of funny to see them playing off to each other. It's great. I really enjoyed the hell out of that movie. It was a lot of fun to watch, and it's just good stuff. And this is a bit non-spoiler, but the scene where they're tripping on acid is just is funny as hell. And
that's really hilarious. Yeah,
and definitely worth a rental or worth it watching. I think it's a fun Nick Cage, Pedro Pascal movie, and because I haven't seen Pedro Pascal in a whole lot of stuff other than The Mandalorian and Wonder Woman. And maybe a couple other things. So it's good to see him do some other stuff because the guy's definitely a lot of fun. The whole room with all the Nicolas Cage memorabilia was a pretty funny scene too. Nick Cage is like, it's not creepy. but it's just it's cool, man. I think it's a neat movie, and I kind of almost wish that it had not come out in pandemic times. I feel like this could have been a very successful movie for Nick Cage to kind of get him back. Maybe not to superstardom again, but at least a decent box office hit. And it did okay at the box office, but it just feels like the movie deserved a little bit more than a limited theatrical release and now going to streaming already. But it's definitely enjoyable. I will spread my word of mouth about that movie to people and try to get them to watch it. But it's fun. And then besides that, Obi-Wan, which we'll discuss in a minute. Man, Long, I can't believe you. Didn't you say you bought Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah. I was supposed to watch it that last weekend. I'll watch it this week.
Okay.
Watch it.
I just remembered. I was just thinking because, I'll let Matt do his download this in just a minute. But, In 2022, I've maybe seen 6 or 7 brand new movies, and all of them have been good. So in some ways, the pandemic has maybe allowed for studios to maybe focus on really great content, you know, and there's been some really good movies so far. And that's a good thing. So, Matt, did you watch anything this week besides Obi-Wan, which we'll discuss in just a minute?
Yeah. The kids, you know, I wanted to get them, you know, watch some of the younger ones. I hadn't got them used to watching Dragon Ball Z. Jake had seen Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super. But, you know, got Justin Cook coming to Comic Palooza. So I'm like, you know, let's start at the beginning with the Battle of Raditz. You know, Justin Cook, he voices Raditz in Dragon Ball Z. And we went almost done with the Saiyan saga. And we're about to get on to the Namekian saga. So my 6-year-old, soon to be 7-year-old, and my 4-year-old, soon to be 5-year-old, both hooked on it. They're just watching it, you know, up until the, until next time on Dragon Ball Z, you know? And that's like, it's so cool just hearing that again. I remember sitting in daycare watching that every morning. And, it was funny because the channel, I think everyone, you know, watched it on the same channel, and, it would just reset. As soon as you got to Frieza, it'd reset and go back to the Namekian saga. And it felt like it took like a year until we finally got the Super Saiyan saga, which had been out for like years before that. But it's fun. They're going to go through it, and it's going to be great. You know, get them used to that, and then we'll go see Dragon Ball Superhero, which some of that stuff has leaked online, it looked like. I won't get into that. But other than that, I did watch the latest episode of The Boys. And I did some looking into, I guess they have a comic series. And
well, it's based on a comic, yeah.
Yeah. And in the comic, Black Noir is supposedly the one that had been pulling the strings in the background, kind of making it so that Homelander kind of lost his mind and lost it. And so I wonder if that's what's going to come up, you know, because you get a little snippet of Black Noir in like the second episode, where he's kind of like, hey, when am I going to lead this, you know, lead, you know, the group of superheroes. And you have the young version of Juan Carlos Esposito, and he's like, look, you're not ready for you yet, you know? And so I wonder if they're going to make this like a revenge thing with him.
Yeah. Someone at work was telling me that they've read some of the books and said that Black Noir is a lot more involved in the books than he's been in the show.
Yeah.
So I was wondering that too. They said he's a bigger part in the books.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and apparently he's kind of like a pseudo clone of Homelander, which makes sense. He can't die. You know, they've tried to kill him, but he just doesn't die except for almond joys. He's allergic to nuts. So Maeve in season 2 sticks an almond joy in his mouth, and he's like goes into shock. which is pretty funny. But yeah, so I like where it's going. I think it's hilarious that Jensen Ackles came in second for Captain America, and you know, now he's got a shot as Soldier Boy on The Boys. So inadvertently got to play a version of Cap, I guess. He even had the cheesy videos too. They came up with this cheesy line of videos for Soldier Boy, similar to the Captain America videos that we saw along the MCU.
What did you think about in the episode 3, the eating of the octopus?
Oh my God. it's very poetic, you know, cause to get into the 7, Starlight had to put something in her mouth that she didn't want in there. And so to get back into the 7, the Deep had to put something in his mouth that he didn't necessarily want in there.
Very disturbing.
Yep. So it came full circle. He's like, it's Timothy. It's like, eat fucking Timothy. Eat him. But he's, the fucking octopus is trying to like get its tentacles out.
it was, yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. But good stuff. This is a good season. I think I like it better than last season. Maybe. I think the ending of last season was crazy, and I think this one's going to end even crazier. I can just tell. So good stuff. I also I did finally go see Top Gun Maverick, and man, those action scenes are just. I felt like I was in the cockpit, and I wouldn't even. I went to and saw it digitally. I didn't see it 3D or 4D. I had a friend that saw it 4D, and he said it was awesome because the screen kind of wrapped around in the theater he was in, and it kind of makes it look like you're in the cockpit. And you know, I was like, man, I wonder what kind of movie experience that was, but it was really good. Of course, the Navy's already saying they're hoping to see an uptick of recruits, just like, you know, the first Top Gun. But it's well written. The Legacy sequel's good. I like that they use the Admiral's daughter from the first Top Gun that they mentioned. And like if you've seen it, you don't know that's who Jennifer Connelly's character is.
Who's still hot?
Yeah. Oh yeah, she's still got it, man. She definitely still has it.
Yeah.
But it's good. He's not on the Triumph anymore, the motorcycle, but he's got a Kawasaki this time. Still iconic. Sorry.
Yeah, it's probably since Legacy sequels became a thing, I guess. I don't know. I guess you could argue Tron Legacy was one of the first, and that's why they started calling them Legacy sequels. I've read that anyway. That's where the term came from. It's from Tron Legacy. This is probably the best of the Legacy sequels. I mean, I think that I could say that pretty comfortably after seeing it.
Yeah.
It's really fucking good, man. There's several people at work have seen it, and everyone's talking about how good it is. It's just, it's a good, good movie. Definitely worth seeing.
Dare I say, as iconic as the first, maybe, in its own right?
It's a better movie than the first.
I think so, too.
It's a better movie than the original.
That's bold to say, but I think it's accurate. I just think
it's not bold because I don't think it's bold to say, because if you watch Top Gun now, Top Gun is classic because it was a hit movie in 1986. It made Tom Cruise a star. But if you're really like – if you really watch it unbiased and take away your nostalgia of it, there's a lot of flaws in that original Top Gun movie. And this new one is almost flawless. I mean, it pays tribute to the original by creating its own new story. And it's really good. You know, there's some issues with that first one. If you really go back and watch it,
I know the action isn't shot as well. That's for sure.
Well, no. And it's extremely slow in the middle of the film. I mean, you know, this young hotshot pilot sleeping around with his instructor, it bogs the movie down in parts of it, you know. So
I always thought she was an instructor. I rewatched the original Top Gun. She's she's that representative from the Pentagon. She's not even military. She's civilian.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I know, but she's like a civilian instructor or whatever. But yeah. But no, it's a better movie. I think I can say that pretty safely. It's better than the original.
I think they do a good job of having. Better. Yeah, they've got some characters in there. The pilots are great. They're you know, very 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 distinguishable, like the original cast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very not the exactly the same. Hangman, I feel is kind of like feels kind of like Iceman a little bit. Yeah, that cockiness. Mm-hmm.
And Miles Teller does great. He's really good in it as Goose's son.
So, he does look like Anthony Edwards in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, no, and he does a great job in the movie. Yeah. Everybody does. It's really well done. Highly recommend seeing it.
Other than that, I did download Rainbow Siege again, Rainbow Siege 6, and been having a fun time playing that again. Played a little bit before I got on here. And other than that, Kenobi, like you guys, I know we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Episode 5 of Obi-Wan Kenobi came out this past Wednesday, and second to last episode. And my brief description of this is probably the second best hour of Star Wars television since the TV series started. And I still think that the Mando season finale where Luke comes in and wipes out the Death Trooper still beats this, because that was just chilling and exciting to see Luke on screen. But this is definitely the second best, because this is a fan service episode in a lot of ways, where we got to see Darth Vader do some things that we always dreamed about seeing. And that makes for a lot of excitement in this episode. As Obi-Wan continues his quest to try to get Leia back home to her dad, to Bail Organa. And, by doing so, he has to stop with the they're not really quite the rebellion yet. They're kind of a resistance against the Empire. But they kind of get trapped into where they are because the Empire is onto them because of the tracker in Lola and the little robot. So Obi-Wan and the crew has to devise a plan to try to hold off the Empire as long as they can to try to escape. And it doesn't go as planned exactly as Reva gets through with her soldiers. We also get some backstory with Reva this time as to why she's so angry, as it turns out that she was in the Jedi Temple when Anakin was killing the younglings, and he almost got her and she was able to escape. And that's why we find out that she really holds a hatred towards Darth Vader. And she's been doing this the whole time to try to get back at him. I found that kind of interesting. How was she able this entire time to mask her hatred towards Vader? And it seems like, yeah, at the end it says Vader, you know, when he almost kills her, he tells her, "You really think I didn't know what was going on?" Okay, but so he let her get away with this entire time. I thought that's where the story was a bit of a stretch to me. I was like, you know, if Darth Vader, this Anakin's as evil as we think he is, why would he even ever let her do that? You know, it seems like he would have killed her a long time ago if he sensed something was wrong.
The Grand Inquisitor comes in all smarmy and shit.
Yeah, we find out the real Grand Inquisitor is still alive. But it feels like they've opened up a lot of storytelling elements in this to finish it all up in one episode. So we'll see how that goes next week. But this was still a really good episode with some really great moments, some great Obi-Wan moments, some really great Darth Vader moments. When he holds that ship and he brings it down, he rips it apart. I mean, that was fanboy dream stuff right there. Yeah, that was cool to see. Him, you know, using the lights, Reva's own lightsabers against her. That was cool. You know, he didn't even use his own lightsaber. The flashback sequences between Obi-Wan and Anakin tying the story together as to how Obi's going to beat Darth in this situation was really cool. Did it feel to you like they alluded to that Obi-Wan and Darth have a dyad in the Force, which is, you know, something that was introduced, of course, in the sequel trilogy, the fact that they connect to each other. They felt like they were kind of alluding to that. At least I felt
maybe,
so. But
maybe a little.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about the episode?
I liked it. I'm surprised it didn't wake. I mean, I woke up early generally to watch stuff like that to avoid spoilers, you know, when I, it was a really good film, really good hour, great action. I really enjoyed, they were DH'd, weren't they, in the flashbacks?
It looks like they used some de-aging technology, I felt.
Yeah.
Not a ton, but they used some.
Yeah. Nice episode. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I liked it, obviously. The action's great. The lightsaber fight with Reva, that's great. Just using the Force, and that's it. Didn't even have to pull his lightsaber. Kind of like, almost reminded me of the throne room battle a little bit with Snoke and Rey. He's just, you know, kind of toying with her, and she's just, you know, trying to strike down Vader, and he's just like, "Well, I'm just going to use the Force to kind of, you know, use your own, you know, energy against you," and and make you wear yourself out and stuff like that. It's kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see what the conclusion is, man. Hayden Christensen has already released a video saying that get ready for the rematch of a century, and this is where the fun begins. So we're going to have a great finale, it looks like.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I feel like I said, I feel like they opened up a lot to happen in this final episode, but hopefully it all comes together nicely. Because I also feel like, even though they said it's only one season, I feel like an announcement is coming from Disney, like Monday or Tuesday. Like, oh, guess what? We're going to have another season, and we're going to be left with like a cliffhanger. I mean, you know, would y'all be surprised at all?
A second season? Easily.
Yeah.
Easy second season. Especially with that, you know, talking about The Boy, it's like now it's like it just makes sense for the first season to be about Leia and the second season to be about Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either that or he's going to Dagobah. Because, I mean, everyone assumed that Obi-Wan knew of Dagobah after he died.
Right.
You know? So maybe a little trip to Dagobah for Obi-Wan's. I mean, that's how we find out where Yoda is.
You think we get a glimpse of Liam Neeson as a Force ghost at the end of season one?
It's possible.
Disney wants to pay him.
He has a certain set of skills.
Oh, Lord.
We have to pay him for those skills.
Oh, Lord.
You have much to learn of the living force.
Yes, we'll see next week. We definitely will have our full review next week of the finale and see how it all ends. All right. Well, let's get into today's feature film then. A movie that, man, it's kind of, wait, will you give me a second? I kind of enjoy this movie. It's fun to watch. It's, you know, I've always been a fan of Robert Rodriguez's work and the things he's done. And this is his sequel to finish out his Mariachi trilogy that he started with El Mariachi, and then he continued with Desperado. And he had a plan for a big, bold vision. I almost feel like this is his vanity project, you know, that he did this kind of for fun and to complete the trilogy. And I've read some interviews where he realizes that it maybe could have been a little more epic, a little bit better. But it turned out the best it could. And that is Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Hold on.
Yeah, he definitely so Once Upon a Time in Mexico, we've got William Dafoe. He is the drug cartel leader, Barilla. And he wants to take down the Mexican president, who's not a huge fan of William Dafoe, because, you know, I guess, you know, he's not something of a Mexican. You know, he's something of a scientist, not something of a Mexican. So, you know, Barilla can't stay in power because he's corrupt. So what happens? We get Johnny Depp, insert Johnny Depp, corrupt CIA agent. He's got all these entanglements going on. He's getting people to do different things for him so that essentially the general that killed Salma Hayek, because, you know, he's horrible for killing Salma Hayek, he goes down by getting El Mariachi out of the shadows via Danny Trejo. So that's the card he's playing right there. But the president still has to die. So Johnny Depp and his fake arm, and he likes pork. He really likes pork, and he likes shooting the cook, I guess. he sets all this up so that Barilla can, I guess, maintain control. The president can die, but the general, he needs the general to die too. So he's going to make sure Antonio Banderas takes out the general so that certain power can still be kept by the cartels. Sounds like a very CIA thing to do. And it's very epic, and it's very fun. I don't know what else Rodriguez probably could have done. It's there's a lot going on, and the battle's just epic. You know, Johnny Depp, he gets his eyes removed because he's seen too much. Haven't even mentioned Eva Mendez, who is a federale, but she's also, you know, playing a couple different sides. She's definitely a really good femme fatale in this movie. And yeah, you get Johnny Depp just shooting at nothing. And I guess he finally catches a second wind with his sixth sense, with his ears that are just becoming accustomed to hearing footsteps and hearing these soldiers. And he takes out a few guys with the help of a young boy who sells him chicle at the beginning, which is Spanish for gum. Pretty cool. He, you know, uses him so he can take out some bad guys. And, you know, it's a fun movie. I enjoyed it. Came out in 2003, so the thing's almost 20 years old. It's coming out on up on a 20-year anniversary. I think it's a decent conclusion to the trilogy. Long, did you you see this in theaters, or did you see
it? No, I saw it on home video.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it as much as you did.
Yeah, so, I guess I felt like it could have been more.
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as the Desperado. It was definitely needed more time editing, and you could definitely tell the pacing issues with it. But other than that, I don't know, man. It's okay. It was all right.
Yeah, it's all right. I feel like Selma Hayek, you know, if you look at the cover of this movie, you feel like this is going to be, you know, Desperado 2.0. And for a Desperado sequel, it really doesn't have a whole lot of Selma Hayek in it. But even though, even Selma Hayek Light, or Diet Selma Hayek, the movie is, it still was very successful. It made triple the amount of money versus its budget. Its opening weekend practically regained all of its budget. So very successful, still iconic. Danny Trejo's great in it. And you got Enrique Iglesias. I guess they threw that in there for the ladies. You know, not. I guess Antonio Banderas wasn't enough. They had to throw in Enrique Iglesias.
That's why I didn't like the film.
Enrique Iglesias and his mole.
Yeah. I mean, didn't like him. Yeah, his music career. He's riding on his dad's coattails. I was like, why is he in this film?
Dang.
Don't like
it. Yeah. I wonder why. There's probably a cool fact out there as to why. Yeah. Mark, what do you think of Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
Well, you know, I like this movie because of the style of Robert Rodriguez, and it fits with the other movies. Johnny Depp is great in it. Well, everyone's good in the movie. I watch it, and I feel like there could have been – I feel like there's maybe something missing from the movie. It feels like – this is one of those movies I remember reading that, you know, Robert Rodriguez is very much known for bringing his movies in under budget and saving the studio money because he doesn't use really large crews on his films. He uses his buddies and his friends, and he saves money that way. He does a lot of his own editing and stuff. But I remember reading when this came out that this was a movie, though, that it was still a studio financing it. And they wanted the movie out when they wanted it out. And Rodriguez talked about it, that he didn't quite have time to finish this movie the way he wanted it to. And he wasn't real thrilled with the original edit either. And that's where the movie, my one thing was, it's a little messy in parts. There's some odd edits in the movie. You're like, okay, wait, what happened? So the movie moves at kind of a breathtaking pace, where Rodriguez's original plan was to make this a little more epic, because he felt like when you call a movie Once Upon a Time in, it feels like it's going to be an epic film. And he had planned on the original cut to be, you know, about 2.5 hours. I remember reading that. But the studio forced him to kind of cut the movie and get it out on time. And Robert even talked about it one time, putting out the longer cut of the film, because there was some stuff that was filmed and shot and they never used, but there was no, I guess, just not enough interest to ever do it, so it never happened. So I think that's where the movie falls short. It suffered from studio interference, which was a very common thing for a long time. It seems to be becoming less common now with the popularity of epic films and superhero movies are allowing these directors to do their own thing with their cuts. I know Rodriguez even talked about that with his cut of Alita Battle Angel, was that James Cameron in the studio allowed Robert to make the movie the way he wanted it and didn't have as much studio interference. So it's becoming more common now to let directors do that. But there was a time where movies like this were affected by the studios. And I feel like this could have been Rodriguez's epic. Like, this could have been like a truly epic action film. It's set up that way.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, I still Long like it a lot. Yeah, all these different storylines are there. It can be set for an epic film. But it still has a lot of great moments in it, too. You know, where he calls his buddies up and they go into the building and they shoot up the place and he's falling from the church tower or the church balcony, and his little fight with Danny Trejo's in there, and so there's a lot of great stuff in the movie too, and that's what I feel like this movie is. Mickey Rourke, there's a lot of great moments in this movie surrounded by moments that make you go like, why is that like that, or why is that like that? Willem Dafoe played was a very odd choice to play Barrio to me. But I think there's enough cool in this movie that you can forgive it for some of his downfalls, because Antonio Banderas and Johnny Depp and Eva Mendes, and they all just ooze cool off the screen in this film. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair to say. And I didn't realize, I guess the Mexican military was going to give the studio access to their vehicles and everything. Once they found out that Marquez, the general, was going to be the villain, they were like, oh, never mind. So they had to depend on citizens actually lending out their personal stuff, collection items.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
kind of cool. He allowed Johnny Depp to do a lot of improvisation on this. A lot of the words that Depp said in the script were actual cuss words, but then Depp chose to say more funny things like "fuck mook" instead of "motherfucker," which I thought was pretty funny. I also, Rodriguez took some knock for retread of stories. So in Desperado, we know that Mariachi's family was killed, or his partner was killed in Mariachi, so he wanted revenge. And in this one, his Carolina and his child are killed. So it's kind of a rehash of some storylines. But Robert Rodriguez took a lot of that from the old spaghetti westerns that did that quite often, where they would have a movie where it was either, someone was killed someone for revenge, or they stole their gold. So that's very much a tribute to those old kind of films. And so I didn't have a problem with that. When I stepped away for a second, I came back, I heard y'all talking about a lot less Selma Hayek, but there's also a lot less Antonio Banderas in this too. That took some flack too. You're doing an El Mariachi movie, and Mariachi becomes, for part of the film, becomes a secondary character in the movie. But then by the time the end of the film, he's back.
Yeah,
it feels like a Depp film for a lot of it. But then towards the end, Mariachi's back in the full fold and comes in to, help save the day and all that. I'm sure Depp at this time in his career probably cost a good amount of money to get into the film, even though he really enjoyed being in it. Depp really enjoyed this role and had fun doing it. In fact, he stayed an extra day and played the part of the priest because they didn't have anybody else to play it. And he was supposed to go home, but he stuck around for that extra day to play the priest.
Nice. Yeah, I always thought that was weird that he popped in there, and I was like, is that Depp? I was like, yeah, that's Depp. And I was like, wait a second, this sounds like a setup, And it's been a while since I've seen the movie, and I'd seen it in bits and pieces, so I guess I didn't remember that part. And he's like, all right, you passed the test. You're still El Mariachi, and you still got the moves, baby. So get your boys and go play for the president.
It was one of the first films to use digital shooting, which George Lucas talked Robert Rodriguez into doing that. He was mixing one of the Spy Kids films at Skywalker Sound and talking to George, and George had showed him some digital stuff he had done and convinced him like to shoot digitally, because Robert Rodriguez was kind of a old school believer in film. And but I think when George had showed him some dailies and some stuff that he had done, and he convinced him to shoot this digitally after George had shot Attack of the Clones digitally, I thought that was kind of cool. So it was one of the first movies to be shot digitally. But I do like the action. One thing Robert Rodriguez is great at is action sequences. And I think that's kind of what saves this movie. It does have some good action sequences in it. And I think that says a lot, because I think it's a pretty fun movie. It's not as good as Desperado. I think Desperado is still the best of the trilogy. But this is still a good movie. It just feels like a what could have been movie at times. Have either of y'all ever seen the original El Mariachi that he filmed for $7,000?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did it on the show, didn't we? Didn't we cover it?
No, we've never done El Mariachi. We did Desperado.
Okay.
No, we've never done it. We talked about it. It's good.
His wife is killed and then his kid's killed, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, Desperado is a pseudo sequel / remake. And then there's some elements from it that are in Once Upon a Time Mexico as well. But it's a good, fun watch. There's some humorous stuff in it, like where the guns fall to the ground. And you can clearly tell they're made of wood. You know, but, I mean, hey, it's a $7,000 film. You know, so,
yeah.
You know, but it's a fun watch. Long, what do you think about Robert Rodriguez's little El Mariachi trilogy?
I was one and done. It was all right. Didn't stick with me, you know. Mediocre, as
Immortan Joe.
Yeah.
Yep. I got that reference. I knew it.
Thank you,
man. No problem, man. I understand you, Long. You may feel like
Mook was the only thing I remembered from that movie.
Well, you know, I just feel mediocre. Like Robert Rodriguez, man, feels like just one of those directors that could have been better than he's been. And he hasn't been bad, don't get me wrong. He's been very successful. But I just feel like he could have – and he still has a chance. I'm talking like he's gone. He's still out there making movies. But I feel like Robert Rodriguez has enough style to his directing and enough ability that I feel like he could have been just a huge action director. You know, like – but then you get guys like Michael Bay who are huge action directors, but I feel like Robert Rodriguez can make better movies than Michael Bay. Does that make sense? But he hasn't always gotten the credit. He hasn't always gotten the credit that I feel is due to him.
And, I think he's got a second wind from his Star Wars career, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to see him direct a Star Wars film.
Watching his stuff, Matt, now more than ever. And really, I mean, I really want him to use this as a springboard to do a sequel for Alita. So.
Yeah. I know there's been some talk. There's a script ready. I know Robert Rodriguez has talked about that. So if Alita happens, the script is ready. So I'd love to see a sequel. I really enjoyed that movie. Well, I have a few things. This is kind of a little bit of a sub-feature on some things you did not know about Robert Rodriguez. And did you know that El Mariachi is in the Guinness Book of World Records? It holds the lowest budget movie to gross more than $1 million at the American box office. So a budget of $7,000 that, you know, he made that money by basically selling his blood. Robert Rodriguez gave a lot of blood to make El Mariachi.
Yeah.
And because El Mariachi was successful enough, he was able to make Desperado. You know, him and Danny Trejo are cousins, and they did not know it until they started filming movies together, and they found out that they were cousins.
That's how it is, man. Show up at a wedding, find out you're related to somebody you're not.
That's right. Him and Quentin Tarantino are best friends, and they have of course, are known to help each other with their movies. You know, Quentin, of course, was in Desperado, and Robert Rodriguez also, you know, helped do From Dusk Till Dawn with Quentin, which Quentin has a writing credit on it. Robert Rodriguez, I already talked about how he likes to be a low film cruise. He wrote Machete as far back as 1993. He had an idea for that movie. We had no idea back then that Danny Trejo would star in or what would happen, but eventually we got the Machete movies. His son gave him the idea for Sharkboy and Lava Girl with his imagination, and he ended up making that movie. He resigned from the Directors Guild of America just to make Sin City, so he could have Frank Miller be a director for one of the scenes of that movie, and he never looked back on it. A lot of people don't know that he owns the L-Ray Network, which is known for, you know, showing
what?
Old sci-fi martial arts movies. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And he owns the L-Ray Network. So a few things about Robert Rodriguez you did not know, man. You didn't know he owned the L-Ray Network? Yeah.
That is cool, man. Does he own L-Ray, though? They've got good Cuban tacos.
No, he doesn't own L-Ray.
Okay. Just the network.
That's been way too many taco references on this show now. But
Mickey Rourke did try and buy a taco. But then that FBI agent said, oh, let me get that for you.
Yes. But I think Once Upon a Time in Mexico is a pretty fun little action movie. It's not perfect, but it's a good fun movie. And I give it a B, man. I think I give it a B because I think it could have been better. So I can see the potential in it. I know critics didn't hate on it too much. They weren't super kind to it, but they were kind of middle of the road on it, you know.
I think a B is fair. I think a B is fair. It could have been more, but a B is fair.
C for mediocre. Not bad.
Long didn't even rewatch it. I already know.
Long, what are you talking about?
He watched it for Eva Mendes.
You fuck mook.
All right. Well, let's do a little bit of news. And what I mean,
and his obsession with that pork recipe thingy.
Oh yeah,
that's wrapped in banana paper.
Yeah,
that's why. That's one of the reasons why I didn't like the film either. You know, like, okay, he's like killing cooks or like whatever.
Yeah, it's just weird humor. I guess.
Yeah.
And he kills Chief Marin too.
Yeah.
Oh man, we lost
a fake arm.
That's right. We lost another great artist this week, man. It's Tim Sale. He's passed away at age 66. Known for, of course, you know, drawing Batman the Long Halloween and working with Jeff Loeb and doing a lot of different comic stories. Interesting thing about Tim Sale is maybe wasn't the most conventional artist. His art definitely stood out for being different than everyone else's. But I think that's what made it so cool is the fact that it was unique. Jim Lee of DC Comics had posted earlier this week that Sale was in the hospital and was fighting a serious illness. And I didn't read what it was or anything. I'm not going to make any assumptions, but we lost Tim Sale this week. And one of the good ones, man. I'm grateful for the great stories he gave us with his art. It just seems like, we've lost a lot of great artists this year in the comic world. And there's another one. And, I've actually never read The Long Halloween. I flipped through it before and kind of looked at it. And I, of course, saw the movie adaption. But I feel like I'm going to have to try to get a copy of it and read it now. After losing Tim Sale.
Yeah, a lot of the Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale collaborations have been really good. The Daredevil runs have been good. Some of the Batman origin stories stuff have been pretty good. It's swell.
Mm-hmm. See, I read, was it Daredevil Yellow they did? I read that. That was good.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. As big as a Batman fan I am, I've never read The Long Halloween. So I need to. So,
yes, you do. Get to it.
I don't know a whole lot about Wonder Man, but apparently he's getting a Disney Plus series. I remember he was in the Avengers a long time ago, I believe, and I'm not super familiar with that character. But kind of came out of nowhere this week that they're going to do a Wonder Man Disney Plus series.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thunderbolts.
Oh yeah. I'm glad you said. No, I thought we talked about Thunderbolts last week. That they were setting up for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
This, you know, we talked about last week that Todd Phillips was working on a Joker 2, and I have no interest in, but more rumors this week that it's going to be a musical and that they're courting Lady Gaga to play Harley Quinn. This just gets weirder and weirder. I'm just like, I don't know. Did either of y'all see the first Joker?
Not me.
I've seen it.
You watched it, Matt?
Yeah.
I mean, it's on HBO Max if you want to watch it. I didn't really care for it, you know, at all that much. I saw it in theaters because I think I went and saw it in theaters because I was on vacation and the kids were in school and I was like, you know, I'm going to go take in a movie. And I went and watched it and I remember walking out of it and just going like, well, that was $6 I spent and I won't get back. You know,
I thought you liked the knock knock joke. You like that joke? No.
I appreciate Joaquin's performance. I will give him all the credit there. He's really good in the movie. I just didn't care for the story. You know, I don't know. It's kind of depressing to watch, to be honest. But apparently we're getting a Joker 2 and it might be a musical. And the last bit of news I have is they're going to, you know, it feels like HBO is going to grind this thing to death, but they're working on a Game of Thrones sequel series. They're going to bring back Kit Harington to play Jon Snow. So they've got like three prequels in the work, now a sequel and an animated movie or whatever. I don't know. It seems like HBO is really trying to cash in on this thing. So we'll see. I never finished the original show. Maybe one day.
One day. You know what could work as a musical? Terminator. Let's do it.
On that note, let's preview next week's film. A movie that is kind of an old fashioned adventure movie, definitely a throwback, but a very fun movie, directed by Joe Johnson, and a Disney film that you can find on Disney Plus. As we are going to go back and talk the pulp classic hero, The Rocketeer.
To some, it was the fulfillment of a dream. To others, it was an instrument of destruction. A creation that could change the course of history.
It was stolen from my factory.
Where's the package?
This is the FBI!
What do we tell the president?
Tell me exactly why this merchandise is so important to the feds.
It's a rocket.
A rocket?
Ow! What's the matter?
I don't know. There's something under the seat.
Oh, my. What do we got here?
What are you supposed to do? Is it a bomb or something?
No.
I wouldn't touch that if I were you.
How do I look?
Like a hood ornament. Stand clear.
What was that?
A flying man!
Big gopher.
Are you trying to kill yourself?
I like it.
Uh-oh, we got company.
You steer, I'll push.
You're what?
I want that rocket, Eddie. Not next week, not tomorrow. Now.
Keep your eyes open for this dame.
Jenny's in trouble.
They're working for a Nazi agent.
With an army equipped with these, you could rule the world.
Cliff! You touch one hair on her head, I swear out.
Shoot him!
We've got the girl. The rocket will come to us.
I love her, Peeve.
Does she know that?
She's gonna find out.
Let him have it!
Hand over the rocket!
Rocketeer.
Go get him, kid.
It's been a while, maybe not a while. I think I watched this when it first, I rewatched this when it first came on Disney Plus, and sat and remember and just enjoyed it. You know, that'd been the first time I'd watched it since in years. I kind of like these throwback action movies. They're always fun. The simpler time when movies did not have to be overly violent or overly complicated. Just tell a good, fun story. And that's kind of what The Rocketeer is. I know you're a fan of this movie too. I know you like it. So, and it should be a good one to talk about next week.
Are you sure it was me or Frank?
I thought it was you.
Probably Frank. Sure it was you. I haven't seen this movie since I was a
I don't remember mentioning it in a while, so.
Yeah.
Who knows? But that's next week's show, The Rocketeer. And that's all we've got for you this week, therebelradiopodcast.com, where you can find all your Rebel Radio needs, as always. The Facebook group is there, which has been doing well. More people are joining the Facebook group so they can follow along what's going on. And but until next time, just stay safe. Enjoy some good television, good movies. There's a lot coming out now. The pandemic is slowing down. There's a lot more new content to check out and enjoy it. But this, until next time, though, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.